I'm Emma Taylor.
I'm Joanna Shanks.
And this is Murder, She Spoke.
Given your chat this week, Emma, what have you been up to?
So normally I would have a whole bunch of true crime things I've been watching, but I haven't really watched that many. We've got it on our package. I think it's Sky, the DNA of Murder with Paul Holes.
Oh,
it's really good.
I'm interested. I always get my TV recommendations from you.
Yeah. It's really, really good. He goes and looks at cold cases from way, way back, and I don't know if they do some of the funding, because I get the feeling that some of the police departments that he's working with are quite small and they're in the middle of nowhere in America, and they maybe haven't had the chance to spend money redoing forensics and things like that. But then Paul Holes and his big shiny crew come in and they're like, bust open these files. We need to see what's going on. And yeah, and he goes and he has a look at them. And yeah, there's been some updates on cases. He's tied murders together that weren't linked properly before and things like that. So yes, recommend it. Go watch it.
I like the sound of it. Is it Billy Jensen as well, or is it just Paul Holes?
Just Paul Holes.
Okay. You know, they've got a podcast.
They do, I know. But I haven't listened to it yet.
I haven't listened to it yet either. But yeah, I like the sound of it. You said it's on Sky?
You can apparently watch it on Amazon Prime and on Sky. So there you go. Follow Paul Holes as he dives into cold cases to analyse the violent interaction between the offender and the victim, exploring the physical and emotional DNA left behind. I love it. So good.
Yeah, I love that. We've got Prime, so I might need to check that out.
Yeah, it's good. Recommend it. How about you?
I have been listening to a podcast.
Thrice Cursed?
I've listened to the first episode of Thrice Cursed, which
would
I
you
really
recommend it?
I would recommend it. I really enjoyed that. It was really good. I've also, so I've been branching out a little bit this week. Obviously, I had been mostly, and I still have been listening to the Harry Potter books. I finished five now. So I'm just waiting on my next Audible credit so I can get the next book. But
that's impressive. They take forever, these books, to listen to. When you load it up and it's like 44 hours remaining,
well,
you're like,
do you know,
wow.
Do you know what I love about it is that, so I actually joined my library online and they have audiobooks there, but there's like a 7-week wait for Deathly Hallows. But I'm thinking, do you know what? They have audiobooks, so I'm going to have a good delve into them and see what there is, because it's like listening to a podcast. You pop it on and you can listen to it while you're doing stuff. Whereas if you commit to sitting down and reading a book, then you have to sit down and just read that book. You know, you can't do other things at the same time. And I think it's only for that reason that I've got through so much of it, or like so many of them already. So I've been listening to my Phoebe Reads a Mystery again.
Oh, nice.
And it's The Murder on the Lynx, an Agatha Christie Poirot book. I've also been listening to Strictly Stalking again, because you know I'm a big fan of them, Small Town Dicks, and my usual Let's Not Meet, because I absolutely love that podcast. Yeah, I've listened to the first episode of Thrice Cursed Pod, which was good, and I've also listened to the Student's Verdict podcast, which I also really enjoyed.
It's probably worth mentioning that a lot of these podcasts that we end up listening to follow us on Twitter or are friends with us on Twitter and Instagram. So if you follow us on those, we tend to share their information. So if you're interested in these recommendations, follow us on those and you'll have a look at them. You'll see them pretty quickly.
Yeah, absolutely. Another one that I've been listening to is a new podcast by another Scottish podcaster. She's also worked in TV and media and things like that, and the news. Isla Traquair. She has a podcast called The Storyteller. The current series is called Violent Delights, but I'm actually listening to the first series, which is Murder Most Foul, which is about the murder of a girl named Melanie Sturton in Aberdeen. I think I'm about I've listened to 8 episodes so far of that. Really enjoying that. That's another one that I would recommend. That's not my usual format. I usually prefer to listen to podcasts which are a case per episode, but periodically I'll listen to one that's basically a big long series of one
like
case.
Like Serial, that kind
like
of thing.
Like Serial, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And that's what the storyteller is. Isla Traquair's one, it's 8 episodes that I've listened to so far. It's about the Melanie Sturton case, and she does a lot of research. It's sort of investigative journalism, and it's really good. It's really well done. So I'm looking forward to listening to Violent Delights, which is the series that she's just released as well. So yeah, I would recommend you give that a try.
We've actually had that murder recommended to us, but I feel like if Isla's done this massively in-depth podcast about it, I don't know how much justice we can do. Maybe we should just direct people to Isla's podcast instead and say, this is a really in-depth look at it.
Yeah, I mean, it's not a case I'd heard of before, but, you know, she has interviews with Melanie's mother and everything as well. I mean, it's proper investigative journalism, and it's good. It is really good. It's a bit like the Doorstep Murder podcast that Sky did. So if you like that kind of style, then absolutely go for it. You'll enjoy it.
We want to thank Podcorn for being the sponsor of this week's episode. Podcorn is an online marketplace that connects podcasts of all sizes with potential sponsors, offering unique sponsorships from short adverts, interviews, topical discussions, and more. If you're lucky, you can even get sent items to try and review. As the podcaster, you get to choose who you work with, so you can tailor the products and people you work with to suit your listeners and your show. Podcorn is an easy platform to use. You browse the opportunities available, set your own rates, and work directly with the brands you want to. I've had lots of fun trying my hand at pitching for some brands that I already know and love, so watch this space. You never give up any rights to your podcast, and Podcorn fully support you throughout the process. Click the link in our show notes to find out more about Podcorn and start monetizing your episodes today.
So what's your case this week, Emma?
So my case this week was actually recommended by someone that we both used to work with, Claire.
Yes.
Yes. So Claire sent this recommendation to me and I hadn't heard of the case. And when I started looking into it, it really gripped me and I just felt really awful for the person's mother. So I wanted to cover it. It was really important to get the information out there and hopefully we can make a difference in some way. So it's the case of Rhys Bonner. Have you heard of this person or the case?
It doesn't ring a bell.
No, okay. So I'll just get right into it. Rhys Bonner was 19 years old. He went missing on the 24th of July in 2019 from the Barlanark area of Glasgow in Scotland. He lived with his mum and 5 younger siblings. So on that day, he was at his grandfather's house. He said he was going to McDonald's and he was going to be coming back later on to watch a Celtic football match. So he's a big Celtic fan. We know for a fact that he went to shop and he bought some cider. So he was planning on going back to his grandfather's house, but he never made it. His mother, Stephanie, had presumed that he'd gone to see his girlfriend that lived in Easterhouse at the time, but it transpired that that wasn't where Rhys was. So Rhys's mum had put on social media, she kind of reached out the feelers, and I get the feeling it's one of those areas that a lot of people know each other and, you know, they're familiar with each other's kids and what people look like and that sort of thing. So she heard that Rhys had been seen with a local Easterhouse woman. There's a lot of interesting information surrounding this person, which I'll get onto in a minute. Stephanie, who was Rhys's mum, Stephanie Bonner, she contacted the police and they told her that they were aware of this woman. They'd had a lot of contact with her previously and they would go and speak to her. However, Rhys's mum and her sister also decided to go looking for Rhys, as you would. And the family confronted the women and she said that she didn't know who Rhys was. She'd never seen him before. No idea what was going on. But there was a lot of rumours in the local area about this mystery woman. People saying that she was very violent. There was other young men that had been known to vanish. There was rumours that she had done away with other people and held young men hostage in her flat previously. And she was described as a very scary person. According to Stephanie, Rhys's mum, one of this woman's friends was there with her. And when Stephanie was, you know, breaking down and trying to say, look, we're just trying to find my son, we just want to know where he is, this woman said to her, just tell her where he is. You've got a nephew. How would you feel? Reese's family were completely distraught. They let the police search all the different family homes. They cooperated with them fully. They gave them all the information that they could. Stephanie Bonner, that was her first child. She had Reese when she was 17. They were really close. They listened to music together. They spent a lot of time together. He was, by all accounts, a lovely young man. He would help anyone. He would speak to anyone. He helped raise all the younger siblings. He would do the shopping for his mum. And he was just a lovely young guy, basically. He'd never gone away by himself before without letting anyone know at all. So there was CCTV that was found showing Reese on the 24th of July. The last sighting of him was with this woman who has been named in the press as reportedly being Donna Drummond. Donna Drummond was around 48 years old at the time, with close-cropped short hair. That's the person that he was last seen with. He was wearing a long-sleeved green Celtic FC training top, blue shorts, black Nike trainers, and around 5 to 8 in the evening, he was leaving the shops and walking along Conisbrough Road in Easterhouse, and then he turned onto Gardine Street. We cannot corroborate any of the rumours or suspicions surrounding Donna Drummond, who is reported to be the last individual that Reese was seen with. Just putting that out there, these are, as far as we know, unsubstantiated, but we're just reporting some of the information that we've found when I've been doing my research. Tragically, on the 8th of August, a police drone found Reese's body in marshland between Easterhouse and Gartlock Village. He was found half naked, wearing just his top and his boxers. His shorts have never been found. Stephanie, his mother, says that his shoes were found in a tree as though they'd been flung up there, and his hat and his bag were found in an alley next to the flat of Donna Drummond, and his hat smelled very strongly of washing detergent. Stephanie is quoted as saying Reese's body was badly decomposed. The police reportedly conducted a post-mortem, but Reese's cause of death is being classed as unexplained. The police have not found any forensic evidence. They reportedly did find street valium and alcohol in Reese's system. Interestingly, I hesitate to call them rumours, because when you look online at social media, at Reddit and other places, the strength of belief that local people have surrounding this person is that she was very much involved in selling drugs. She was well known in the area. She was well known to the police. There was a lot of history surrounding her. So apparently the last person that he was seen with was known to deal street valium. Reese's family are convinced that Reese was murdered, and they want the police's investigation looked into. They have concerns that the police have not found any evidence of criminality, despite Reese's body being found without eyes or hair and in the state of undress it was in. Another concern the family have is that the GPS coordinates they were given by police, so this was when they were asking where Reese's body was found, they were given specific GPS coordinates. They were going there to mourn and, you know, leave offerings and flowers and things like that for Reese. And neighbours nearby said, that's not where he was found. We saw this. We actually have it on video. That's not where he was found at all. So his mother, Stephanie, claims that they showed her a video, and it purportedly shows Reese's body being dragged along a field by Police Scotland search and rescue team. And the area is about 1,000 feet in difference between where that happened and the neighbours say that he was found, and then where the police told them that he was found. I've got a quote from Stephanie, quote, that video was the last thing in my mind every time I closed my eyes. Why wasn't my son treated with dignity? He's only a teenager getting dragged half naked for everyone to see. From what I could see, there was no forensics or nothing. They just dragged the body. I showed CID the video that was given to me showing his body being dragged, and I felt they dismissed it. The neighbours have told me it disturbed them what they saw. Reese's family have lodged a complaint with Police Scotland, and they want to know if the coordinates given by the police were actually wrong, or if his body was actually dragged to that other location that they were given. Police Scotland have previously said that his death has been treated as unexplained, and they maintain that they looked into the case fully at the time, and that his death in itself or the conduct of the officers is not being re-examined. In September this year, 2020, I've got a quote from Superintendent Maxine Martin from Police Scotland's Professional Standards Department. Quote, "We would like to extend our heartfelt sympathies to Stephanie Bonner following the death of her son, Reese Bonner. Reese's death was previously investigated by a dedicated team of officers who established no criminality, and a report was submitted to the Crown Office and Procurator Fiscal Service. A complaint about the police has since been received from Reese's mother, which is currently under consideration by staff within the Professional Standards Department. My officers remain in regular contact with a nominated representative for the family in respect of the ongoing complaint investigation." End quote. So Reese's family have campaigned tirelessly to raise awareness. There are multiple Facebook groups. Stephanie in particular has done lots of media interviews, radio interviews, and they're just desperate for anyone to come forward with information about Reese's death and whoever may be responsible for it. There is now a £2,000 reward for anyone who provides information leading to the arrest of Reese's killer. You can contact Stephanie Bonner on Facebook, the Justice for Reese Facebook page, and Reese is spelled R-H-Y-S, Bonner is B-O-N-N-E-R. You can also contact Police Scotland or Crime Stoppers. So this one, obviously, I found really, really interesting. I normally try not to buy into any sort of hearsay, gossip, rumours, you know, the rumour mill, that kind of thing. But there is a massive amount of information online, if you want to look for it, that would suggest that this person knows more than they're letting on. And it has been more or less confirmed that she was the last person seen with Reese. So I would be really interested to hear your take on that.
When did you say this occurred?
Last year.
I haven't heard of this case.
No.
Which is quite surprising, given the circumstances of it. Was there any indication of how much time had elapsed between when he was last seen and when he was found? How long was that again?
About 2 weeks.
2 weeks. But did you not say that when the body was found that there were no eyes, understandable, but also no hair?
Mm-hmm. If you look at the picture of him, he's got a thick head of hair. He's got a lovely head of hair.
Okay, so was there any indication given about why he was found with no hair?
This is the thing. The police are stating that there's no evidence of criminality. And something that I do believe and agree with is Stephanie has said, and some other campaigners have said, that they believe, you know, he's a 19-year-old boy. He's been found with drugs in his system. The police, in their eyes, have gone, it's an overdose. That's it. Case closed. And they've not looked any further than that. Also, one of the campaigners, I believe someone called Sandy Smith, said that they feel like it was just the luck of the postcode, because it's not a particularly affluent area. So they feel like it's just one of those things that happens. There's lots of people on drugs and drinking and causing trouble and stuff like that. So it's just another one of those things that happens. They also said that, you know, if a young woman had been found half naked in marshland, it would have been an uproar. You know, there'd been so much more in the news about it. But like you said, you've not heard anything. I have a horrible feeling about it. It doesn't sit right with me at all.
It's really concerning. Drugs or no drugs, obviously, I'd imagine that there are circumstances that lead police to decide how to treat a body forensically. But I don't know what the process is, or I don't know how police make that judgment call. So I don't know if they go to a crime scene, if they say, well, it's only if we see obvious indications of, say, foul play, for example, like a, you know, a head injury or, you know, something like that, that would lead them down the sort of potential homicide route, or how they can make that judgment call before they've forensically examined a body. Because it seems bizarre to me that the fact that the body would be dragged anyway, I can't seem to understand that, whether you'd be treating it as unexplained or a homicide or anything else. I don't understand the reason for doing that or the justification for doing that.
The only thing that I had thought was, in a couple of the sources, it said that the body was like partially submerged in a little bit of water because it is marshland. But even then, you wouldn't expect them to drag it for any period, you know, any great distance. And according to another one of the sources, which once again is unsubstantiated, we don't know what the video is definitely of, they actually had a rope tied around one of his limbs to pull him. So why?
That's horrific. That's horrific. I mean, yeah, if he's partially submitted in marshland, then surely they would send a crew out with like a stretcher or something.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's hard without context to understand this, but in the interest of preserving any DNA or any forensics that might be present, I can't fathom why tying a rope around one of the limbs and dragging the body out would be a dignified or justified way to retrieve a body in any circumstances. I mean, it's not a car you're dragging out of a lake. It's a person.
Lack of care, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a person. I mean, surely would you not just send in a team with a stretcher, place the body upon it and try and preserve any forensics that way? Because ultimately, you don't know. I don't understand how you can make that judgment call about the cause of death, because until, you know, a post-mortem is done and the forensics are examined, you don't know.
The thing is, it could theoretically be he's been with an individual, he's taken drugs in their presence. According to friends and family, which I know are more likely to say this, so I'm not daft, you know, he wasn't known to take drugs. So perhaps this may have been the first time that he's taken it. It's street Valium, it's not prescribed.
Yeah, let's be stronger.
He could have overdosed and then they've dumped the body. But there's still a responsibility there. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, let's be honest, you get heavy drug users, right? Mm-hmm. You know, you get people that are heavily dependent upon drugs. That's one thing. Yeah. And making a judgment call that they've potentially overdosed, or, you know, they've died of complications or septicemia, mm-hmm. or something like that. Do you know what I mean? I understand that. But for the vast majority of the remaining population that aren't heavy drug users, there are a huge amount of people that have taken drugs, you know, whether that be just occasionally, or, you know, for a night out or whatever, or because it was a dull Tuesday, or for whatever reason. Just because you have drugs in your system doesn't automatically pigeonhole you.
Yeah. It kind of feels like that was the decision that was made before they even did the post-mortem. That's the feeling that Stephanie has and Reese's family have, and I totally get that.
Yeah, because, I mean, ultimately, they wouldn't know.
No.
Until they've got toxicology back, they wouldn't know that he's got drugs in his system.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and if somebody said this boy had taken street Valium or whatever, well, that's not proven. That's just gossip at that point.
Yeah.
So you can't place any merit on that. And it's only at the point where the toxicology comes back that you can say, this boy died with drugs in his system.
Yeah.
He either died because of those drugs, or he died for another reason, or the drugs contributed to it, whatever. So, I mean, obviously it's hard to know from a layman's perspective, but I don't understand what process the police would go through when attending a crime scene to make that call as to whether a case could potentially be, you know, a homicide, unexplained, accidental, suicide, or whatever. And if that would then lead them down a certain path in terms of how they preserve the evidence and how they would treat that body. Or, you know, is there actually a blanket approach in that because you don't know, you ultimately assume X, or you ultimately assume the worst because you can always scale it back later, but you can't ramp it back up. If you've destroyed evidence, you can't get that back once it's gone.
To me, it's pretty telling, though, that they didn't specifically ascribe his death to being an overdose. They said it's unexplained, but there's no evidence of criminality, which to me is kind of like, we don't really have enough to do anything about it, so hands off, like, we're not making this a thing. That's just how I view it.
It's hard for me to understand how you can make a judgment call. You could make a very, very basic judgment call, surely, but until you know what comes out the back of the forensics and toxicology and all the rest of it, I don't understand how you can make that judgment call. And surely the process for the police would be to treat everything as suspicious unless you have hard evidence to suggest otherwise. And therefore, there is a very obvious reason not to treat it with the care that it should be treated with in terms of preserving any evidence. Unless it's a cost issue, it's, you know, unless it's Police Scotland will only treat a body as, you know, potentially having been victim to foul play if certain factors are present.
You would expect, though, that they would have told the family more if it was, you know, I get the feeling that there's not been enough information given to the family to justify the fact that they're saying there's no criminality and they don't have a reason for the death. They're just kind of, I think they feel like they're in limbo.
Because the police aren't saying one way or another. Mm-hmm. And if they're not saying one way or the other, then from my point of view, there would be no reason not to release everything to the family. If you're saying that you don't know and you can't make a call either way, then there'd be no harm in releasing the information to the family.
See, even if they said, look, we think it could be foul play. Unfortunately, the body had been, you know, unfortunately, the way that these things happen, if the animals have perhaps got into a body or the elements, or if it's been submerged in water, we would find it incredibly difficult to prove. There's no DNA evidence. We don't actually have anything concrete. It's all totally circumstantial and we can't prove it, but we're pretty sure, you know, it was suspicious. Yeah, it'd be incredibly difficult for the family to move on and deal with that, but they'd have a bit more to go on, you know, whereas they're living their lives. And I think, obviously, it's a lot of the attention has focused on the last person that he was seen with and a lot of rumours swirling around her. And that's got to take a toll on you as well, because you feel like your son's killer is out there walking free. And you know, if she moves somewhere else, that you can see it on the Facebook page, everyone's like, oh, she's moved to such and such, people need to watch out, that kind of thing. And that's got to be exhausting, living that way.
I agree. It's bamboozling, Emma.
It is bamboozling.
It's bamboozling. It's a very, very strange case. Very, very unusual. And I'm surprised I haven't heard of it. But then I guess if the police don't suspect that it, you know, was a suspicious death, then they would have no reason to plaster it in the media, I guess. But yeah, interesting. Very thought-provoking.
Very thought-provoking. I think that it's worth putting it out there if anyone does know anything about it. Who knows, maybe someone knows something and eventually they'll come forward. I am inclined to believe it wasn't an accident or a natural death. Just gut instinct is telling me. I just feel very uncomfortable about a lot of the facts of the case. Once again, we can't substantiate any of the rumours and reported drug dealing habits and personal habits of the individual that was last seen with Rhys. But if you want to do more research, there is a hell of a lot of information online, and it is a bit upsetting seeing how tragic the case is and how difficult it's been for his family. But I would recommend people to have a look into it. So yeah, that was the very sad, tragic case of Rhys Bonner. Thank you to Claire for recommending that to us.
I do have a little true crime fact for us this week. I thought this one would be most appropriate since I was actually talking about joining my local library online earlier. So did you know gambling in a library That's a no-no. This problem was so great, gambling in a library, that it warranted its own Library Offences Act in 1898. The Act prohibits gambling in any public library and was extended to the use of obscene or abusive language. Offences could cost the perpetrators up to 40 shillings, which is £700 in today's money.
Gosh, that's quite a lot.
That's a lot, isn't it?
You would need to be convinced that you were going to win a lot of money.
So, I mean, 1898, so gambling in a library.
That's not that long ago.
I know, I can't understand why...
You would want to gamble in a library?
Yeah, I can't understand, one, that people did it anyway, that's surprising, but also that it was such a problem that they had to bring in a Library Offences Act.
So they obviously didn't have the shh people back then. Like the librarians would come around and hush you constantly.
Yeah.
I don't think it'd be easy to bet silently.
Well, I don't know. I guess it depends what you're playing. I mean, if you're playing craps, then it would be loud. Mm-hmm. But if you're playing something like poker.
What if you were like betting on horses?
Oh, yeah. I was thinking.
In the library.
I was thinking card games and dice games, but actually, yeah, you could be right.
Chicken fighting in the library.
Yeah. Cockfighting. Yeah, you're right. I didn't actually think about that,
or it could have been like, guess what? I bet you I can't fart the alphabet. You know, you don't know what it is.
Yeah, it's a bizarre one. I've actually just looked it up because I wanted to see if it's still a thing. Because you know, I was talking recently about all these old laws getting thrown out, which kind of like bums me out a little bit.
We were saying that we would like to go and break a bunch of these stupid laws.
Yeah. So any person who in any library or reading room to which this act applies, to the annoyance or disturbance of any person using the same, behaves in a disorderly manner, uses violent, abusive or obscene language, bets or gambles, or who, after proper warning, persists in remaining therein beyond the hours fixed for the closing of such library or reading room, shall be liable on summary conviction to a penalty not exceeding 40 shillings.
Okay, but real story, when I was in high school, I never left my school library at all. So I would legit be that person at like throwing out her, you know, like at the pub, like when they're trying to like round up all the drunk people. But it'd just be me with the book, like, no, one more chapter.
I bet they hated people like that.
I absolutely endorse the no abusive behaviour, because you're in a library, like who goes to a library to be abusive and aggressive?
Yeah, but yeah, just gambling in a library. Now I'm really thinking, like, what kind of gambling was it? Was it like card games? Was it dice games? Was it like cockfight? Obviously not cockfighting, but what was it that was so popular that people felt that they could go to a library to do it?
Yeah, so I'm wondering if at some point in that time, someone sat there and they're like, God, you know, this is really getting on my nerves, this getting fined every time we come in, you know, bloody bet. And then they set up a casino. When were casinos set up?
Well, yeah, I don't know.
Did casinos not exist? Is that why it was? Could they think of nowhere better? Why were we getting in the pub?
I would imagine that casinos arose, that might come on the back of like Prohibition or something.
Hmm.
Maybe like gambling and drinking, like underground.
All the fun things.
And then eventually it came above ground, and that's how casinos were born. I don't know, I'm totally guessing here.
Completely wrong.
But it's a strange one, isn't it?
That is very,
not
very
not weird. That many of the facts aren't strange. But yeah, so there you go. So that's our strange fact for this week.
I love it.
Thank you so much for listening. We will be back next week with another episode. You can contact us. If you would like to give us a case recommendation, you can email us info@murdershespoke.net. You can also find us on Instagram, Twitter and Facebook. We retweet a lot of our recommendations, podcasts that we are in association with, podcasts that we enjoy. You know, we retweet a lot of their content. So if you like our podcast, there are many others that we can recommend to you, which you might enjoy. There's too many to list on each episode that we do. So please check us out on socials. Thanks so much for listening. We'll see you next week.
Bye.